Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm your host, Melinda Garish, and I'm from Cutting Up Stables here in Shirley, Indiana. And Karen will be joining us here shortly. So we appreciate you sending in your emails, and we've had lots of questions, and we'll be getting started here this evening. So, and Karen should be joining us at any moment here. Are you there, Karen?
Yeah, Melinda, can you hear me?
I can, yes. So some of the topics we're going to be discussing tonight are bracy and tight, the nibbler, stop saddle roll, and won't stand while mounted, and objects above the head spooks the horse. So, Karen, if you're ready, we'll go ahead and I'll read the first question, and we'll just dive right in here.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, this one's from Jill, and she says, I have a 5-year-old mare who is very sensitive. She will try very hard for me for a while. Then it feels like she thinks she's is done and has offered enough and kind of shuts down. She will get very bracy and tight, and if I keep asking her to do things, she can get worse. If I keep things slow and in her comfort zone, she'll usually will stay soft and responsive. I would like to take her in one of your clinics. I'm thinking she might not do well working for several days, for several hours. Is there anything I can do at home to prepare her for your clinic? What do you think? I do have another horse who doesn't seem to be bothered like this. I could bring her, but I'd really like help with my sensitive mare.
Mm. You know, it's a really good question, you know, that people have around coming to clinics is, you know, which horse do I bring? Which horse is going to give me the you know, the best learning experience. And oftentimes, it depends. You know, sometimes when you go to an advancing clinic, you know, I want to take my advancing horse. You know, I want to take my levels to another stage. But when you're in a situation like this, it's where it's hard to diagnose where the problem lies, because that could be either mental, emotional, or a physical problem. And sometimes when there's something that's kind of perplexing you and it's ongoing, that's really the ideal horse to bring. Now, the scenario of the clinic, you know, it's over 3 days. That's another idea that people get is that, oh my gosh, this clinic is going to be, you know, hard on my horse and we're going to be hot and sweaty for 3 days. And clinics are really not like that. The most challenging thing about coming to the clinic is the mental engagement that the human has over 3 days. But what's interesting is the horses, you know, really enjoy it and relax because we're spending those 3 days learning their language. And to them, they love that. They really enjoy understanding what's being asked of them, you know, with more clarity. I mean, that's really what the clinic is all about. In fact, you know, rarely does a horse even break a sweat. I listen for little words in the questions, and that word work comes in, you know, working for 3 days. Well, you know, and Melinda, we've done, you know, multiple clinics, and Melinda's been to them. You know, as you're going through the clinic process, the horses actually become more engaged in what's being asked of them. And so it's like children. People will say, well, you know, the child only has a short attention span. But then that child can go over and do something they enjoy, like play video games, and they can do that for hours. So this always, you know, puts a question in my mind. But it's like if you've ever been in this situation where you're around a group of people that don't speak English, you don't have much interest in the conversation because you really have no understanding. That's when horses can kind of quit on you because if they don't have that clarity of communication or what's being asked of them isn't being asked through what motivates a horse, things like comfort, relaxation, things like that, then the horse kind of gives up. It's kind of like working for no pay. So over the course of those 3 days, I think what you'll find is the horse will become even more relaxed, even more supple, even more engaged over those 3 days. And it's really an interesting process. So that would really be the ideal horse to bring to the clinic because oftentimes, you know, it's our approach. It's like kids. You can interact with kids all day long if you're engaging. But you can take them into a classroom and go, you know, now we open the books and we will do, you know, and you can turn them off in a heartbeat. They're looking out the window and don't even pay attention. to the teachers. So it's really about learning that art of communication, that art of conversation with a horse. But to do that with a horse, it's really like another language. That's why I like using that example of another language. When we start engaging with them in the language that they already understand, gosh, I'll take courses, and in a short amount of time, they recognize that I can communicate with them in a way that they already understand, and I'll hand the lead rope back to the owner and walk away, and the horse tries to walk with me and is you know, kind of tugging on the lead rope to come with me, even though the owner's holding the lead rope. So to give you that kind of an example of, if you're fluent in the language of the horse, gosh, and you're a great conversationalist, that horse will remain engaged, you know, all the time. Now, if it's something physical that the horse can do so much and then it starts becoming uncomfortable physically for the horse, that's something different, and that's also something we can check out, you know, there at the clinic. So that's the nice thing about bringing a horse to a clinic, is that we can spend the time, you know, face-to-face with your horse and go through those steps and see what it is. And sometimes I do have horses that it's a physical limitation that they're experiencing, but that's the best place really to find out. But those are some things to kind of think about, you know, which horse to bring to a clinic, and, you know, what you would expect to get out of it. I've had some people, you know, not really be able to decide and bring both horses if the facility can accommodate it. And then once they, you know, hear the introduction to the course, then they might know the answer right then and go, okay, this horse, you know, one of the horses is going to, you know, give me the most learning experience. That's what you're looking for, is which horse is going to give you the greatest learning experience when you come to the clinic.
Okay. Well, Jill, we'd love to meet you. And if you're close to Indiana, I'm not sure where you're from, it doesn't say, but we'd love to have you come this coming weekend. And you can check out Karen's website and get more information and register at that point. There's still some audit positions if you'd rather not take that step out, but we'd love to have you come with your horse and check that out. So it's this weekend and then next weekend as well. So don't hesitate, and, you know, if they can just get through that first step, they're glad that they're here. I've never had seen anybody that's not glad that they have come and gotten over that. So
yeah, we talk about that at the clinic. You know, when you arrive, I ask people who was a little bit nervous about this. Everybody raises their hands, and I said, well, congratulations. The hardest part of the clinic is over, because the hardest part of going to a clinic is, number one, deciding to do that. And then you have, you know, your logistics, you know, who's going to take care of the other animals, you know, all those kinds of things. But once you get there, you're really immersed, just you and your horse. It's almost like a weekend retreat for couples. You know, when do you have 3 days to really gain that mutual understanding between the two of you with somebody who can coach you, you know, through those stages? And really, it's not what you learn at the clinic, it's what you take home and build on. And Melinda, I have to compliment you. Every time I see Melinda, and it may be, you know, 12 months later, and what she took from the clinic and what she did with it, I didn't show her how to do all these really amazing things with her horse. You can see some of the things if you go on Melinda's website, Cutting Up Stables. But if she took the principles and the concepts, and that's a lot of how I teach and how we do these teleseminars. If I can give you the principles and the concepts, then you can go back and you know how to sort through the challenges that you're going to encounter. Because really, there's no answer that somebody says, well, what do I do with a, you know, horse that won't go in the trailer? You don't go, okay, well, you just do this and this and this, and there you go. I mean, it's just not a realistic response to that. But if I can give you the concept of making the horse, you know, allowing that horse to have the desire, how do you create the desire of the horse to go in the trailer? Then all the rest of it's detailed.
Yeah, I had to be one of your most resistant people to attend the clinic.
we won't bring that up again, Melinda.
So, and obviously you won me over. So Jill, if you're out there, don't hesitate. Take that step. You won't regret it. So, okay, we'll go ahead and move on here. The next one's from Kathy, and we actually have, and Helen as well. There's two people that kind of have a similar situation going on, so I'll address the first question, and then we'll come in with that second one and see if you want to add anything else to it. But this one's from Kathy. It says, first of all, thank you, Karen, for doing these seminars. What a great help they've been. During your last session, one of the topics listed was the biting horse, and I was wondering if you could address this a little further. I have a 5-year-old gelding, and he wants everything in his mouth, from lead line to shank of bit, you name it. I have 2 jolly balls and an old doormat in his paddock that he loves to pick up and throw around. He will even go in to kind of a tug-of-war game with me when I pull the lead ropes, cross ties, etc., out like a dog would. To seem to him it's like a game. The problem is when he comes to me or a member of my family and he bites us. He doesn't seem to do it aggressively type of act, but it certainly is not acceptable. Many times he will, as my husband calls it, get a cheap shot at us, being very quickly coming around and biting our arms or our backside and then very quickly pulling away because he knows he's going to get hit. And so I didn't really see a question in there, but she's asking if you can maybe go and address that a little bit further to get that biting situation under control.
Okay. Well, if I remember right, and you help me, Melinda, when we talked about it last time, we talked about when a horse bites you, there's lots of reasons for it. But horses don't usually bite the horse that they view in the position of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Not you, and I say usually because it's not impossible. Between my two Andalusians, Brigante and Debutante, Debutante is totally respectful of Brigante until Brigante is in a situation that he can't defend himself. And it's really interesting because it may be something where I have him on a lead line and he's doing something, or I may be having them circle double. But when Brigante can't defend himself, Deb has his mouth on him, and he just takes every advantage. He's like, you can't do anything, and I'm going to chew on you. So that's why I say there's no absolutes in these things. But generally speaking, a horse will not put their teeth on you if they view you in the position of leadership. Now, leadership is an ongoing thing. You can't just go out there and say, well, I own you, I feed you, I do all this stuff, and therefore I'm the leader. It doesn't work that way. Number one thing with horses to identify leadership between the two of you is have that horse stay out of your personal space. I mean, period. Now, if you want to hug your horse or be close to your horse, then you be the one to close the distance. When a horse comes into your personal space uninvited, it does not mean what we think it means. So we think, oh, he loves me. Well, he loves to play with me. That's the rest of that sentence. So to change our mind about that, because it means something different from a predator species to a prey animal species. So it's like puppies. Puppies will all sleep in a pile. There's a touching thing. Oftentimes we'll have a dog that will sleep at our feet but be physically touching us. There's touch and closeness and to identify packs, you know, among predators. Horses, you don't see little foals go sleep in a big pile of foals. You know, they don't have that touch like we do. In fact, if a mare and foal are laying down together, they may be close, but rarely will they be, you know, close enough even to be touching. So it means something different, and that's where the horse is confused, because you're interacting with him in such a way that he says, well, you're below me, and so therefore I engage in you. I was out with my horses today, and there were 2 geldings in the pasture next to me just playing, you know, biting back and forth. I call it the gelding game. So here's the thing that happens when a horse bites you, and usually mares bite you for different reasons, okay? But if a gelding bites you in a playful kind of way, which is what you're describing, and you smack him, what you have done in that moment is accepted the invitation to play the gelding game. Because isn't that what geldings do? They bite back and forth. I bite you, bite, 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 back and forth, up and down. I bite your lip, da-da-da. So it doesn't really work to smack a horse. Now, it's hard because it's a reaction. You know, a horse puts their teeth on you and you know, your hand automatically comes up to defend it as you naturally would. But that's not where it should end. It should be out of your personal space, unless invited. And I even, you know, define it like I said, if I want to hug my horse, there's nothing wrong with hugging and kissing your horse, as long as that's not all you do. So it's much like children. There's a balance of, you know, that leadership is you have that on all the time. That expectation is on all the time. And the moment you drop that role of leadership, you know, what's a child or a horse or a dog going to do except take advantage of it? Not because they're mean and mischievous or anything. They're just designed to keep testing you. That's in their nature to do that. So it's not something you're ever going to make him stop doing if you can kind of change that expectation, but you can change his mind about doing that by doing some of the ground skills things to establish leadership that I describe in my videos, to, you know, come to a clinic. I can show that. But number one thing, out of my personal space, I can hug you, I can touch you, you cannot come in and touch me uninvited. And it just makes all the difference in the world. And then give the things to the horses, like the towels and the balls and all those things that are acceptable for him to put his mouth on and pick up with his teeth. Not the human, not ever the human. In fact, I was talking about this today. It came up in conversation today. I do not have my horse put their lips on me. Some people go, he's so cute. And I'll tell you why. The teeth are really close to the lips. and these horses, they nip each other. It's just their form of communication. And I don't want that horse to feel like, well, if I can put my lips on you, maybe my teeth are next. So I don't want to leave that up to my horse. A horse would not go up to the lead horse, and the lead horse would not tolerate them putting their lips on him unless that lead horse has decided, now, you know, we're going to do mutual grooming. That's the only time a lead horse will, you know, allow another horse to put their teeth on him. But it's in a very specific way. And most people around horses have even done that. If you go in and really take your nails and scratch up around the withers, sometimes the horse will come back and want to groom you too. They have that impulse to mutually groom you. But that's a very different motive. But that's what I would do with this horse, is just communicate and teach your family to do it, especially the kids, because that can be a very dangerous thing. You know, it's the same thing. You know, we had a horse that, you know, you'd carry the hay out, and he'd come up and he'd take, you know, snatch bites of hay out of your arms. You know, be carrying a big thing and going through the gate and doing all this stuff. And, you know, I tried to, you know, tell my husband, was like, listen, he needs to get out of your prison. He was like, oh, you know, it's okay. Until one night he came in, did not see his hands, and just about took his finger with it. See, until something bad happens, we oftentimes think, oh, this behavior is okay, until it's not. And then you realize that the horse never needed to do that in the first place. We just didn't realize the situation we were putting them in to say, oh, it's okay, it's okay. Oh, now it's not. All of a sudden the deal changes. So that's what I would do, is make sure the horse stays out of your personal space, give them plenty of things to play with, and just help the horse understand the difference of what's okay to play with and humans are not okay to play with.
Karen, do you remember when you met Latigo for the first time? It was right after I got him, and he had this exact issue. And you dealt with this in that way. And as soon as I could establish that leadership, that went away. It just, you know, and it's amazing what you teach for that leadership role, what that does, and how everything else just changes with that horse.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And he was a biter, and everything was in his mouth. And it was horrible. So there is hope, Kathy. You can do
this. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But it's something you're aware of all the time. And I'm aware of it also. I met my farrier this morning, and I'm, you know, leading my three mares, and I'm aware of what they're doing and who's, you know, potential to pushing who and me. And you develop that awareness. But it's not until, unfortunately, it's not until things kind of happen that you start realizing, gosh, you know, just leading three horses together can get you run over. So I want to make sure all three of those mares understand, you know, you can be number one when I'm not here, but now that I'm here, you're moved into a different position. So it's not that you just never, you know, you have a horse that never tests you or never does those things. You just develop that awareness and that natural response, just like another horse would. And that, to me, that's what horsemanship is really all about. It's developing those qualities of leadership as if you were a member of the herd, because really you are. When you're around your horse, you are in their herd. That's how they view you.
Well, I know when you talk about the geldings play and stuff like that, until you had said that, I was not realizing I was engaging in that, you know. And then after you had mentioned that, and then I watched some of the other horses, and I thought, dang, I am doing that. You know, and that back and forth stuff, you know, he was having fun.
Yeah.
10 minutes to put halter on.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it can be better. So, yeah. So, Kathy, take that suggestion, because it does work. So, the other side of that one was Helen. So, let me ask that one real quick and see if there's anything you want to add to it. She's also got the nibbler kind of thing going on. It says, what do I do about horses that like to nibble on you? My horse loves to nibble on my shirt, my arm, et cetera, and I've tried various strategies, grabbing his lip and shaking him, backing him out of my space with the crop, to name a couple, to stop this, but he starts right again every time I reprimand him. So is there anything else you want to add to that, or do you feel like we've covered it?
You know, it's funny when you said the nibbler, it sounded like the bad guy in a Batman movie, the nibbler.
Nibbler. Well, when Latigo was doing it, believe me, I thought that. Like, oh.
The nibbler. You know, horses are really funny. They really are a lot like children, where they know right where the edge is, and then they test it, you know. And they'll test it every minute of every day. But, you know, like I said, you know, if a horse is standing 4 feet away from you, their lips can't be on you. You know, and it really cures that, because in several ways, that horse, number one, is not in your proximity. I mean, literally, when I'm standing there with my horse is out of reach to me. To me, that is a polite and polite, respectful, and safe distance. See, and so often, you know, we want to stand there like we're holding hands with our husband, like, you know, we're shoulder to shoulder touching each other, and that is not how horses view their world. Because if you're close enough for them to put their lips on you, you're probably not aware that your close proximity is indicating to your horse that you're not in the leadership position. So it's an interesting dynamic, and one that you're approaching the behavior from accessing the herd psychology. You know, somebody I greatly admire is Cesar Millan with the Dog Whisperer. And, you know, you hear him talk about pack leadership, you know, in every other sentence. And, you know, that's what we're talking about here. This is herd leadership. It's a different dynamic, but it's the same. It's the same expectation. So if your horse doesn't have their lips on you, you know, that they have a different view. But the moment those lips are touching you, the horse has stepped into your personal space. Now, this is something else I'll mention, is that people will back the horse out. But if you back the horse out, and you described it, back the horse up with the crop, what that indicates to me, and I'm just guessing, but it's such a strong pattern with people, is you probably walked with the horse. And so the horse backed up, but because you walked forward with it when you were putting the pressure on the horse, when you stopped, you were probably just as close to his lips as when you started. See? So it's backing the horse away from you so that the horse is at a distance. You keep your feet still and use rhythmic pressure like I show in the video courses. Use that rhythmic pressure and then leave the horse alone. Give the horse release when they are standing at that distance. And Melinda, you've seen that, you know, time and time again. We just don't realize that our feet are even moving. You know, and I've had people, you know, keep your feet still, keep your feet still. And you just swear that your feet are still. I had one woman in Tucson. She was so sweet. She just didn't have the body awareness to realize she was walking with the horse. I had her sit in a chair. I brought out a lawn chair and had her sit down and have the horse. Then she really had to use her tools to back the horse out of her personal space. And that little shift in her physiology changed her body awareness to realize that she was not really getting the distance between her and the horse. She was backing the horse up, but that doesn't, that's not half the leadership points that you get when you back the horse out of your personal space and put distance between you. That's the real key right there.
I think I even had a stand on a box to get the feet to quit moving.
I think I did have you stand on a box.
I think I had a stand on a box.
But see, this is the wonderful thing about muscle memory in our body is that we do things without even thinking. You know, we go through routines like getting ready in the morning. You know, you put the same, you know, the left foot always in your, you know, jeans as you're putting them on. You always tie your, you know, your right shoe first. You know, we get into these routines to where we're not aware, we're not mindful. And developing that mindfulness in our body awareness requires us, you know, doing different things. But as we age, we do less and less. We get into a routine. And so we don't develop that body awareness to be able to even know that our feet are moving. But here's the wonderful thing about muscle memory is that when you develop a certain skill, it feels very foreign at first, and then you get more comfortable, and then it becomes the second nature to it. So that's it's kind of the bad news and the good news. The bad news is that the habits that you have are difficult to change and reshape your behavior, but once you do and you practice it, then that behavior becomes your natural response to the situation. Because and that's really why I think education with horses is so critical, because no matter what horse it is, no matter how much experience or, you know, quiet nature or any of those things, any horse can have any behavior at any time for any reason. And so to me, the ultimate safety with horses is to develop our skills to respond instantly to whatever behavior we experience, and even being able to recognize what's going to happen, you know, before it even happens, being able to adapt to our feel or our timing or our release or whatever it is that's going to help us through that situation.
I know just standing on the box made me very aware, and then obviously I didn't want to fall off the box. So I mean, it almost fixed that problem immediately. You know, it replaced that habit just real quick.
Right.
So
right.
So it does work. So okay. Well, we can move on here. We've still got several to go here. The next one is from Valerie, and this is stopping a saddle roll. And she says, I have a question about how to stop a riding horse from falling. When I bought this draft horse about 6 years ago, she rolled with me 3 times the first year. They were not malicious rolls, more like a me itchy, me roll now, oops, me forgot rider up there, oh well. Now she gives no warning, no pawing, actually does not even stop her walking, just drops a shoulder and rolls. Once she was leading, the other 2 times she was following. I got a little smarter and realized 2 times were on wood chippy surfaces and 1 we were at the beach. So whenever we cross sand or mulch-type footing, I would talk to her and do a little S-turn to remind her I was up there. And I changed her saddle pad to a synthetic one instead of a natural wool. Nothing had happened for 3 years. Then one trail ride, she started to roll again, but I realized it and hit her ears with my crop. And I'm not kidding, you know, as I'm not kidding around here, and she lurched back up and I was still on. She's a very steady and quiet mount otherwise, which is what I need now that I'm 60. How can I get her not to roll at all, ever?
I've
never heard this one addressed before.
Oh, yeah. You know, horses, they're so smart. You know, they can roll one time, and the person steps off, and the horse goes, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, we're good. I forget what it was on. It was probably Funniest Home Videos or something. There was a pony with 3 kids on it, and the pony would go over to a cement bench in the garden and sit down on that bench, and the kids would roll off the back of the pony.
Oh.
And, of course, they're laughing and rolling off and thinking, you know, it's so funny. Well, how did they didn't teach that pony to do that, see? So it's really amazing that horses will learn to do this. My sister, Peggy, who's not really into horses, you know, she rented a horse one time, and, you know, and I talked to her. She said, yeah, we went up over this hill, and here was a pond in a park, and the horse took off at a run, and she's going, oh, wow, this is fun. We're running through the park. Probably shouldn't be in the park, but it was fun. The horse wouldn't stop, went straight into this pond, and laid down with her. You know, so here's my sister going, what? They're so stupid. I'm like, well, it sounds kind of smart to me, really, because look at that. You're off, you know. So they're really amazing that they do that, but I'll tell you how to counteract it. When a horse goes to lie down, and the horse has a strong pattern, so sometimes they'll get the jump on you. But when a horse goes to lie down, their nose goes down first. So it's the same answer, and if their nose doesn't go down, it's very difficult for them to lay down and roll. Usually the nose, like you can watch a horse out in the field, and just by looking at them, you can see them. They'll put their nose down, and they'll kind of circle around a little bit. Then the front legs go down. They kind of buckle their knees, and they get down on their shoulder, and then the hindquarters is kind of the last to roll over onto the side, and then they're having a nice roll. So if you can prevent the nose from going down, and don't do it by holding the reins, because any horse can just pull the reins out of your hands. I've seen it plenty of times. It's not that. It's changing their mind about it. When the horse goes to, and this works for horses grazing on the trail and things like that too, the horse's nose goes down, you be ready with the end of your reins or something, or even your hand towards the hindquarters. And that's where I would start with it. And you can even take a horse with, my halter and 12-foot line and go to an area where you think they'd like to roll, and you could start just on the ground. The horse wants to lie down. You can take the end of that line or the stick and the string that I encourage people to teach with in the teaching stage and put pressure towards the hindquarters and then take the pressure away when the horse's head comes up. And it's really an interesting thing. And we do this ourselves. When you go into the living room and you're picking up the kids' toys and you lean over in front of your honey oftentimes has the impulse to give you a nice little love tap on the hindquarters. And the first thing that happens to us is our head comes up and we turn around and we go, quit that, I hate when you do that. And they laugh, hee, hee, hee. See, it's a common thing, but our head came up. So it's the same thing with a horse. The horse's head goes to go down to graze or lay down or whatever it is. You put pressure towards the hindquarters. And I'm not talking about a big whack on the hindquarters because a horse can jump forwards or even buck. You put pressure with rhythm, and it may not be, one big whack, but it could get firm fast, but start light, medium, firm in something that they don't want to feel. The instant the head starts to come up, takes pressure away. And I've seen, it's the same answer to people who have a horse that grazes on the trail or those kind of things. In fact, in some of my videos, I think they're on the television show, I'm out in a grassy area doing my presentation. And I said, a lot of people, they take every bit of grass or feet or anything. We ride in a, dirt-only arena, so, the horse isn't trying to eat all the time. And I demonstrate how to do that, how to get the horse to not even be looking at the grass. I've taught whole clinics in grassy areas when they got rained out of an arena or something like that. And people say, oh, we're not going to be able to do the clinic out here. My horse is going to eat. I show them this technique, and within 5 minutes, I'm not exaggerating, within 5 minutes, none of the horses are even thinking about the grass because every time their head goes down, their butt hurts. See? So it's the same kind of thing, but your timing's going to have to be really good to help that horse put pressure on that hindquarters until that head comes up. Okay? And conversely, when I ask my horse to lie down, I have pressure, at the top of the neck, and there's a whole, process that I do, but I put pressure on the horse's head as part of my communication to lie down. So it works both ways, but what you're asking for is how do I prevent it? And that's the important thing to do. And when I got Deb was a drop and roll fiend. We could be at a long trot. I'm riding Burke, ponying Deb, and Deb would get into nice rolling sand or something like that, and his head was next to me 1 second, and he would just disappear like he just vanished. And I used that same technique on him to say, do not roll. And it was pressure towards his hindquarters. Even though he got down, to his belly, it was still pressure on the hindquarters. And, knock on wood, he hasn't done it for years now. And I don't think he thinks about it. But maybe he does and makes a different decision. But then there's other times I go to a sandy place and I ask him to roll. So, again, it's that communication that you develop with your horse. It's not the rule to say never do it. But do you have that leadership, that quality of leadership that communicates when to do it and when not to do that? So I hope that helps you with it, because it can become a very dangerous thing when a horse, you know, starts making those kinds of decisions. And I know people go, oh, it's not a problem. I jump off and he rolls and I get back on and we go. I go, well, someday you may have, you know, somebody else riding it and it does turn into a major problem. They don't know to get their feet out of the stirrups. Horse rolls on them. It's a very serious, can turn into a very serious thing there. So I'm glad you asked the question. Thanks for that.
Yeah, that was a new one that we hadn't had. So I was glad to see that and appreciate Valerie sending that in. So, okay, you want to go ahead and move on then, Karen?
Sure.
Okay. This one, it doesn't say who it's from, but it does say she has a 5-year-old Morgan that was, and she's got that capitalized, was standing still as a statue when he was at the trainer's last month while I was getting on. Now, as soon as I get him home, he isn't. He's moving around and giving me a hard time again. Is he testing me? And then do you have one of your DVDs that addresses me? And I guess it is from Sandy. So, Sandy, for submitting
I'm
that
here.
Question. Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, Sandy, so then what you're seeing there is a difference in behavior between a trainer, somebody that is good at communicating their expectations with a horse. And your question is the horse testing me? The answer is absolutely, as they should, as any good horse should. But, you know, I need to videotape that because it's a very common challenge that people have with horses. But it's a very, I don't want to say a simple fix, you know, because it's your timing and your release and those kinds of things. But when you, the biggest thing, number one reason why horses don't stand still while mounting is because remember horses are pattern animals. So as soon as most horses feel weight in the saddle, the pattern is go. We just go, and we don't hear, the horse walks off without, you know, before we even cue them to walk off, and the horse goes, and there's no response from us, so then it starts becoming a pattern.
But I
so
never got to
what
that.
I,
go ahead.
Sorry?
I never got to that part. You know, when I was going up to ride him when he was at the trainers, I would go to get on up there, and he would stand like a statue. I hadn't even gotten as far as getting on yet. It was putting my foot up towards the stirrup.
When you got home.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's why I'm talking in generalizations. A lot of times what the problem is that people have is to get on a horse and just stand still once they get on. That's the number one reason horses walk off while mounting. Now, the other thing is when you go to put your foot in the stirrup, are you on a mounting block or on the ground?
On the ground.
Okay. What I like to do, see, it's the release part. So if you put your foot in the stirrup from the ground and the horse starts walking off, what do you usually do?
Take my foot out.
Okay,
oh.
And then what? And then what?
Well, then I'd, like, turn his head around and I don't know. I'm trying to think what exactly I do, but... get mad at him, I guess, but
well, that you can get mad at him if you want to, but it doesn't help the situation, because oftentimes we lose our awareness of what our body's doing. Like we've already been talking about body awareness, when our emotion comes up, our body awareness really it's very difficult to have that awareness. So be aware of what you're doing. I'll give you an example of probably one of the most challenging, not the most, but he was up there probably in the top 10. It was at a demonstration in, I think it was Equine Affair in Ohio. And this horse, it was a Tennessee Walker. It wasn't a Morgan, but it was a gated horse, big, tall horse. And this horse just had a very strong pattern of walking off while mounted. So I would put my foot in the stirrup, hold the left rein short enough that I could see the horse's eye. I didn't crank him around or anything. I just held it there enough so that if he walked forward, he would just turn. And then he started walking off, and I held on to the rein in the mane, and I had the ability, I don't know if you do, but I had the ability to keep my foot in the stirrup, and I just hopped along with him.
Okay.
Now, I hopped along for a long time, and this horse was like, why aren't you either, you either need to swing up like, you know, like a kid and off we go, or take your foot out of the stirrup. And this horse just had this very, very strong pattern. So I just, he just kept turning, and my foot was in the stirrup, and I was sitting there very grateful that I'd been doing yoga because my knee was near my ear. This a big, tall horse. And I hopped for a long time. But I didn't do anything. I didn't get after him, nothing like that. I just stayed there. And the moment the horse stood still, I took my foot out of the stirrup. And
but did he keep moving his hindquarters away from you?
Yeah. The hindquarters kind of kept going away. And, you know, I could kind of keep the shoulder near me. I didn't want the horse to go forward.
Right.
But he just kind of kept curling around. The hindquarters was going away, going away, going away. And he just didn't know what to do. And I just said, you know, this is where I feel like Dr. Phil, and I look at the horse and I go, how's it working for you? And the horse goes, well, it used to work good, but now I just got a big old cowgirl hanging on my side here, and, and I'm not sure what to do. And I had to allow the horse to exhaust the behavior because I don't want a horse to just stand there and be, I don't want him to be scared to move. I don't want them to be stoic about it. I want them to just have the understanding of the expectation. So when you're shaping behavior, the most effective way I've found is to exhaust the behavior. So that horse was really committed, not stubborn, not anything. That horse had just done that for so long. And it sounds like your horse has other options, and it may not take as long as this one. But I think in the course of, you know, probably 15 minutes, which is a long time for a horse to exhaust some of these types of behaviors, I just held him, and I put my foot in the stirrup, and he'd start his pattern of moving and moving and moving. And here I am talking on a microphone to an audience, and everybody's watching me waller around, you know, and I didn't care. I just, you know, and it got less and less time, and pretty soon the horse realized, if I stand still, I get released, you know. And
you didn't get your foot back out of the stirrup. You just got on when he stopped.
I took my foot out of the stirrup and stood on the ground when he stopped.
When he stopped, okay.
Yeah. See, and that's where sometimes the horse, you know, we get him stopped and then, whoa, we swing off, see?
Yeah.
But I want that horse to learn through release if he just stands there. Like, I'll take a horse that moves away from a mounting block. That's another common thing that horses do. And I'll just, you know, put my foot in the stirrup. If he moves away, I step off. I'm standing on the mounting block. I don't hop along with him then. And I just move him in a circle, move his hindquarters, bring him back, swing him in, relax when he gets there, put my foot in the stirrup, my foot out of the stirrup, in, out, up and over, back off, you know, that kind of a thing. So if you take your goal, say you have, you know, an hour with your horse, rather than making it an hour of riding, say, okay, we're going to do an hour, you know, call it schooling, you know, of just mounting. Even if you never go anywhere, just helping your horse develop that confidence while mounting. And then the next day it'll take, you know, less time and less time until that horse, you know, people, you know, will just go, wow, you know, they won't even believe that your horse didn't move a muscle, you know, when you get off.
My other Morgan, I've got him to the point where I can tell him, stand still. You know, damn it. And he does. So
yeah.
I want to get
that's like the T-shirt and the two horses, and the one says, my name's Whoa, damn it, what's yours?
Yeah, exactly. That is the same thing.
Yeah. Well, it is, and a horse can start to understand, you know, those kinds of messages, but, you know, I found just a really nice way to just, you know, allow the horse to have that behavior. When you look at it as behavior, then we can kind of remove that, you know, we don't have to take it personally. It's just a behavior, and I enjoy that. I love that when somebody says, oh, a horse is having a problem. That's why I do the teleseminars, because I get excited to go, ooh, that's cool. You know,
yeah.
I want to see that. I want to see what would it take to change the horse's mind, to have the horse have the idea of, oh, the foot's going in the stirrup, and that doesn't mean me move my feet. In fact, when I move my feet, I just make myself uncomfortable. When I stand still, I'm more comfortable. Now it's my choice to stand still. And to me, that is the art of horsemanship. How do you get your idea to become their idea?
Oh,
But when we, and here's another thing, if you put your foot in the stirrup, you know, if you think about from the horse's point of view, and then the horse goes, ooh, you know, I don't know, what should I do? And they start moving their feet. If we take our foot out of the stirrup and turn him or get after him or anything, we can actually make a horse lose confidence. And they say, man, every time somebody goes to, you know, get on me, boy, here I go, I'm getting in trouble. And they're not even really sure why. It's an interesting thing. I'll give you a parallel example, having a horse go into the corners in the arena. Well, the horse, you know, ducks out of the corner, doesn't want to go in the corner, and then we get in a fight in the corner, and the horse goes, man, I don't want to go in that corner. I always get in trouble in the corner. Stay out of the corners.
Interesting.
But if we rest the horse in the corner, pretty soon your horse is the one taking you into the corner. So it's kind of that, you know, reverse psychology kind of a thing. You'll start thinking, you know, in that way with the horse. And once they get it, boy, and they're so proud, it's like a kid that gets the answer and goes, oh, I'm so smart. And you're going, you are. You know.
Yeah.
Really fun. Really
fun. Thank you.
Try that out. You're welcome.
I will. We'll definitely do that. Thanks.
Yeah. Great. You're welcome.
During that process, because I could see it being hard to keep your foot in the stirrup. A lot of us aren't as tall as you. And could it even be workable and take part of that forward motion out by having them stand in front of a wall or something there while she's working through that? Or does that not make you address the issue?
Well, you know, it's kind of like, you know, some people like to take a horse into a bullpen because, you know, a bullpen is a round pen with solid walls because it takes the visual distraction away, you know. And now you're the only thing for them to see and watch and that kind of thing. Well, as soon as you take them out of the bullpen, you're starting over again because, you know, now the visual distraction, you haven't conditioned the horse to remain engaged in your conversation, mm-hmm. you know. So it's that same kind of a thing. You can do it to develop a pattern, but as soon as there isn't a wall in front of them, then you're kind of back at square one anyway. Now the horse may pick up the conditioning to not move as you're getting on and off, and I've seen people get on and off horses. You know, there's a gal, she does a really nice job with horses, but when she starts colts, she does a soft hobbling, and you know, which means she uses, you know, soft gunny sack kind of thing, and they get on the horse and get off the horse, and she said it. You know, it's not my approach, but I couldn't fault it. She says, never had not had a horse buck or walk, and they learn to stand when you're getting on and off. I mean, you're conditioning behavior, and the way she approached it was very, you know, she had, you know, great intentions and those kind of things, and that really worked for her. She started colts for, I don't know, 4 years. Like that. So there's no, that's the thing, there's really no one way to do it. And that's why I keep seeking, you know, personally, that's my personal journey, is to keep seeking a variety of approaches and, you know, seeing how it works with my principles and philosophy around the approach of horses. You know,
okay.
You can say it's forced or it's not forced, or, you know, it's something that you have to really decide for yourself. I think that's the neatest thing about horses, is that all this information is out there. You know, what works for me may not, you know, work for you. I saw a professional golfer giving lessons, you know, on TV, and he said, but keep in mind what this works for me, it may not work for you. And I went, oh, my gosh, he's a top golfer, you know. But that's the truth. That's the truth of it.
No.
Don't get too dogmatic about your approach. There's lots of ways to approach horses and people and dogs and kids and golf. So
we'll have a DVD out on this soon?
On the golf?
Yeah. Well, no, on the mountain. You hate when we corner you on that.
Yeah, no. Actually, we have a series of videos that's just about to be released, and I'm not going to put it out there because then we start getting all kinds of it. But keep an eye out on the website, the newsletter, and Facebook, and their common problems like these. And that's one of them. We're definitely, you know, capturing and putting it on out there. So.
Okay. Well, Sandy, thanks for joining us tonight and
very
submitting
much.
Your question. And Karen and folks, I watch your program on University Channel. Oh, this one is from Ed, I'm sorry. And he really enjoys your approach to training. I have a Missouri Foxtrotter Quarter Horse Cross Mare that will be 4 months this month. She spooks really easy, and we've been working on leadership, trust, and bonding while using as many desensitizing objects as I can think of, such as plastic bags, feed bags, blue tarps, etc. We've made very good progress with almost all of these tools, but Mame really has a problem, spooks, when just about anything is above or is in, or is placed above her head. This includes entering or leaving our round pen, which has a 6-foot-wide, 8-foot-high gate. We're making progress on that also, but I could use your advice. Do you cover this particular snafu in any of your videos? I'm really not looking for a shortcut, but I need a little advice about getting into Mame's mind and doing a little bit of social engineering, if you will. Keep up the good work. Any advice you will offer is greatly appreciated. Thanks and best regards, Ed.
Great. Well, and it's interesting, you know, because I picture what that might look like, you know, when a horse spooks is something over their head. And oftentimes, you know, when you're desensitizing a horse, it takes, you know, every horse in every situation. Like you can desensitize a horse to something on the left side, and then you go to the right side, it's a completely different horse. Or you can spend time in front of the horse's nose, and then you start spending time around the hindquarters, you know. And, you know, horses get into patterns. And the one about over their head, and it sounds like what you're doing, Ed, is making great progress with the things that you're comfortable with. Oftentimes what happens with the position of over the head, especially with a horse that, you know, you're not spending time, you know, you're not obviously not riding yet and doing that, is you need to spend more time over her head with things. The easiest way to do that, like if I take a horse that is, you know, people consider head shy, I use the extension of my arm, which is the stick, and it's very specifically made. People will take, lunge whips and things like that are flimsy, and you don't have as much control. I've seen people, there's another tool, it's a wonderful tool, and it's kind of a heavy gauge wire, and people will put a flag on the end of it, and there's kind of a foamy handle, and they'll flag horses with that. And it's a great tool. The problem is, you know, for what you're using it for, you're going to be wanting to pass that over the horse's ear, so you need something long enough that will stay above her head even when her head comes up kind of in alarm. So if you use the 4-foot stick that I use, it has enough rigidity and length for you to be able to take something like plastic or even just the stick by itself. Don't even challenge her with plastic yet. Just see if you can just go up over the top of her, like touching her personal space, not even her ears or head, just cross her personal space back and forth. What happens with the over-the-head thing a lot of times with horses is the horse gets alarmed because it's new something, you know, new, different, sudden or abrupt. The horse's head goes up, and if it's our hand or a tarp or something like that, the horse can put their head up higher. Even a young horse can get their head up higher, and if the object goes away, meaning the object can't stay above the head because it can't reach or it's on something too flimsy, every time that horse pops their head up and the object is below them now, it actually reinforces the behavior of popping their head up. So the release, if they get, which in their mind means release and reinforcement, those two pieces kind of go together. So what I do with a horse that, say, is ear shy and tends to throw their head up in the air is I just very passively and very relaxed, you know, I have a hold of the lead rope, don't do it without a halter and lead, have a short enough lead rope that you can put a little bit of feel. And that when she pops her head up, just a little bit of feel. You're not going to yank her head or anything like that. Just put a little bit of feel. Keep that object up above her head, just passively moving. And the moment she relaxes, puts even an ounce less pressure. Her head isn't dropped, but if she just releases the pressure slightly, take the stick and away instantly. You're going to reinforce not the up direction of her head, but the down direction. Even if it's just an ounce of pressure she gives you. So every time she lowers her head is where her release is going to be, not throwing her head in the air. But the better you can stay above her, the better. Now, another thing that I'll have people do sometimes is sit up on a fence, set up on a sturdy fence that you feel comfortable on. I fell off that fence. Just get above, or even if you stand on a wall, or even stand, on a hay bale or something like that, just get above her and spend more time above her with things. And again, you don't have to take a big old monster tarp and things like that yet. Just put yourself above her. I do this when I start colts. I spend a lot of time above the horse. That's one of the purposes of ponying a colt. So that colt can get used to you communicating from above. So when I start a colt, I spend a lot of time above and behind the shoulder, because guess where I'm going to be when I ride? So you can communicate to a horse from any position, but when you go to a position that they're unfamiliar with, they'll naturally be less confident, more skeptical, we think it's spooky, but it's just behavior from a herd animal that says, hey, I'm not familiar with this yet, I'm out of here, and even though the head just pops up, still, if the head pops up and the object can't stay above them until they can relax and get accustomed to it, it becomes a release and a reinforcement of the head up behavior rather than the head down behavior. So hopefully that'll kind of help you with it. It's kind of the same answer with the horse that's ear shy and things like that. So hopefully that'll help you. But the tools really do make a difference. I can't emphasize it enough. Melinda was at an expo where the gal brought the little, it was a miniature, and it doesn't have to be tall horses that do this. This was a miniature donkey that you could not touch the ears, and they had a special bridle made and all these things, and I forget his name. I think it was something like Herbie or something. It was just adorable. But, she brought him in, and she said this, and she said the problem had existed for years. And I took those tools just like I described there, and, it was really just within a matter of moments. It was probably 5-10 minutes, and this problem that the little mini donkey, and he wasn't so tall that he could get out of the way. He just got good at pulling his head away, and what he was bothered by didn't go with him, so it kept reinforcing that pull-away behavior. But once I just used the stick, which just had a small flag on it, and I just stayed passive, and when the donkey relaxed, I relaxed and took the flag away. See, and that's probably the hardest thing sometimes for people to recognize is, we don't give the animal release until, it looks perfect. You've got to give little crumbs. I call it crumbs of comfort along the way. So if the horse pulls, 10 pounds of pressure and then relaxes even just a few ounces, take the entire stimulus away. It goes back to the same answer when the horse is difficult to mount. When that horse stands still, don't jump on, Take your foot out and just stand there and give them a rub. Let their neck relax, and then do it again until the horse starts realizing, gosh, if I just stand still, life is good. So I love those life is good T-shirts, I always think of the horses going, whew, man, life is good.
So. And it's better when we learn how to communicate with them.
that's really the challenge, in shaping behavior. And like I said earlier, I admire the work of Cesar Millan because he's teaching people how to shape the behavior in dogs. And it's really amazing the transformation, not just in the dogs, what the dogs are capable of doing, but the people. But the challenge, he can take a dog, and within minutes, the dog's like, okay, you're the pack leader, I got it, we're good. But the challenge oftentimes is our ability, because, that's kind of the question I ask people is that, I can take horses and train them, and it can happen very quickly, but, you were experiencing at the trainer, the horse stood still when you came home, it all unravels on you. And then there's your question, how do I develop this form of communication with the horse? And that's what I really enjoy. My program is not so much a horse training program so much as it is a people training program. And that's the fun part, because my goal is not to have you become dependent on me or my teaching or my information. My goal is that you don't need me and you ride off happily in the sunset and you know what to do, as situations arise, because you develop you understand the philosophy and the concepts to be able to adapt to any situation.
Okay. Karen, I have just looked at the clock. Can you believe it's already 9 o'clock here? An hour has gone by. So
it's the fastest hour of the month, I tell you.
It is. So, well, we appreciate everybody submitting their questions. They were really good questions tonight, and we hope those help you. And please tune in again next month. If you're thinking on coming to a clinic and you're near Indiana or don't have to be just right in that state, just come on over. We'd love to have you. And Karen, do you have any last parting comments at all? Or
no, I'm really excited to be out there, Melinda. I really thank you for putting together the clinics, and I know people really appreciate your efforts to put these events on so that they can get the help with their horses. And Melinda had such a great response. She ended up putting a second clinic, so I get to stay for the week and beautiful Indiana. Maybe we'll have some nice weather. It's getting a little hot in Phoenix. We're going to hit 90 this week. But
Bring that weather with you. I love that.
I'm looking forward to it, and I'll be up in Canada a couple weeks after that, and Connecticut. So, you know, please look at the schedule and see where I'm going to be at, because if I can help you one-on-one with your horse, that's ideal. And if I can't help you one-on-one, the video education is just absolutely, I get really great feedback from people, because even if you've got videos, the feedback I get is that it's the difference is in the explanation. Somehow the way I describe it and the way I explain it, people are really able to go out and do this themselves. So, you know, really it's your desire, whatever it is that you desire with the horse, the equipment, the clinics, the videos, everything that I do is so that you can realize what your goals are with your horse. So I really appreciate you doing this, Melinda, being such a wonderful host, and really glad to be able to do the teleseminars, and I like to think that it really helps people.
Well, we appreciate you putting your time out for us as well, and getting that information to us, and we will see you tomorrow. So have a safe
Great.
Flight. Yeah, we'll be there to pick you up. So,
okay.
Again, everyone, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next month. Good night, everyone.
Thanks Melinda. Thanks for
You're welcome.
Everybody for your questions. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.